Smith Show. Check out the website, theRickSmithShow.com. So I'm still, you know, I've been looking at the tweet that Trump sent out on Sunday, that, you know, we're going to officially end Iran. And it's one of those things where you just go, is this the best way to go about diplomacy? Now, I had a bunch of people respond and go, oh, but Rick, what you don't understand is that this is Donald Trump's negotiating. It's his practice. It's what he does. It causes a little chaos, and then that opens up communication lines. I'm going, if that's the case, I personally think it's freaking stupid. Just kind of throwing that out there as an aside. Anyway, let's find out what's going on around the world and in Washington, D.C. Bob Ney, Talk Media News. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So I'm hearing this. I want to get your thought on this, because you're the guy I go to anything Iran. Mm-hmm. Will this kind of we're going to stir up a bunch of, you know what, we're going to rattle the sabers, we're going to point threats. Is that going to help bring the Iranians to the table?
No, this is much, much more complicated than the comparisons people are making to Kim Jong-un. And it's internally complicated. You know, a year ago, you and I were talking about the fact that there was no doubt with Bolton's appointment, he would try to get us into war. John Bolton wanted to preemptively bomb, just in case, Iran in the last 20 years. He just wanted to bomb them, period. And he made no hesitation, and he mentioned the use of nuclear weapons. So that's who finally got in the administration in a high position, because, you know, he was fought by the Republican Senate years back when George Bush wanted to appoint him for ambassador to UN. Now, I went on about that, Rick, because it's an integral part of the answer to the question, but this is not simply saber rattling. In fact, Bolton has used the president. He's used him, and now he's got the president backed into a corner, and I'll tell you exactly how. Bolton convinced Trump that, wow, you know, hey, you threatened Kim Jong-un, you threatened to blow his house up, you threatened, and he talked to you. Do the same to the Iranians. So Trump thinks, okay, the art of the deal, there we go, blah, 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 he's going to do it. And then you noticed, after it got hot to the point where a match could have made us go to war, you'll notice that Trump said, oh, about talking, I'll talk to the Iranians. Well, the Iranians want no part of it. They won't talk to him. He's cut the nuclear deal. He's threatened them. Now, the regime's no picnic. They're not nice people. But the fact remains, this strategy doesn't work, Rick.
No.
It doesn't work.
No, I'm with you.
And so now, right, period. So what's happened now is they're faced with a war. Well, see, Bolton didn't care. What does Bolton care? He gets him up to the brink of the war. Something stupid happens, which, what did they try to do? Oh, the Saudis had a tanker bombed. Well, the Saudis probably bombed their own tanker. Look, the Saudis telling us that they got bombed, these are the same people that chopped a reporter up while he was alive in pieces, put clothes on somebody else, and said, oh, he left the embassy. So we're supposed to believe them when they say Iran bombed their tankers. And you know what? If Iran did bomb their tankers, let the members of the royal family get out of Las Vegas and away from the strippers for a little bit and go ahead and bomb Iran themselves.
Yeah,
how's that?
We'll sell them the stuff. There you go. That's the thing in this. I mean, I don't want our, you know, I tweeted out the other day. I said, look, you know, everyone who voted for Trump and the Bolton folks, Monday morning, make sure you're at the recruiting office to sign your children up because mm-hmm. their war machine's going to need a bunch of dead soldiers to honor.
Right. So, you know, Bolton got him into the corner, convinced Trump, and now the president's sitting here. It's going to be very fascinating. Either the president's going to bite into this whole thing, or he's going to realize that the plan doesn't work like Kim Jong-un, and then he finds a way to, you know, back away without, quote, backing away.
Yeah, now what do you say to the person?
I really don't think he wants war. If he gets us into a war with Iran, this isn't Iraq. They're very well equipped. We equipped them for years. If we get into a war, because the question I would pose is this. We will go to war for what? They decreased their centrifuges under Obama. They haven't had enough time to make a nuclear weapon. Two Saudi oil tankers got bombed. Who cares? You know, nobody died. Who cares if the Saudi tankers? So what would we go to? One rocket is lobbed into the green zone? Is that what we, is that how we get? This would be worse than the fake weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say is, you know, if we're going to go to war against every regime that's bad, We're going to be at war with a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, let's start with China. At least we get some jobs out of it back on this end, you know.
when you stop and you think about what they've gotten us into, I mean, because I've had this conversation over the weekend, as you point out, what are we going to get out of it?
Right.
And the jingoistic response is, well, Iran won't have nuclear weapons. And I'm going, really? Well, we had that, but you didn't want it because the last guy did it. And it's just... The emails I'm getting from different groups, the responses I'm getting, all are really, really frightening to me.
It is, because we're on the brink of war. And again, and you make a great point. We canceled the nuclear deal, which rolled back the centrifuges. And by the way, and I wrote about this in my book, Sideswiped, that deal was brought to me by the ambassador from Switzerland to Tehran, who came to my office in D.C., offered the Bush administration a deal. Bush administration had a great big argument internally. Dick Cheney won, and we didn't accept the deal, which would have put nuclear inspectors on the ground early in 2000, okay? We would have had that deal from the Iranians. We didn't take it. So finally, Obama comes along. He makes a deal. They decrease their centrifuges, right? They roll things back. Then we say, you're really not, even though the nuclear inspectory commission said they were doing that, we said, no, you're not doing it. We're going to cancel it. Now we're saying, you're not part of the deal. We're going to get you. I mean, which do we want?
No, and
makes no sense.
The other thing is will anyone accept a deal that we're a part of? You know, I also saw that there's an Israeli-Palestinian peace plan. Really?
Well, here's what we're going to do. You and I get into a great big argument with each other, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go get two people in New York, and I'll get maybe a person in D.C., and the three of us are going to sit down and decide how you and I become friends again. We're not going to invite you. We're just going to sit down without you, you see?
Yeah.
It's the same scenario.
But yeah. will the Israelis and the Palestinians ever, is it ever possible under any circumstances? I mean, we could come up with the greatest peace plan in the world, as you pointed out, two guys from New York and a guy from D.C. Is it ever going to be possible? My entire lifetime, we've been watching, the peace process, and they're still going after each other.
Well, and right now, but here's how Trump's doing it. It's the New York and D.C. guy example. Donald Trump is going to have a two-phased policy. Number one is going to be economic. So he's going to invite finance ministers from countries, which are probably Arab countries, and from Israel. And they're going to meet in Bahrain. Now, the Palestinians aren't going to be there. But he's invited some Palestinian businessmen. That could be a couple of Palestinians from California,
yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So that's the Palestinians. The second phase is fascinating. It's going to be the more political phase where they're going to actually discuss land and Jerusalem. We already did that. We made that decision already. So that's my point. We're doing a peace process talk, which doesn't have much hope anyway. You're right. But we're doing one without the Palestinians in Bahrain. I mean, who's kidding who? This is a Jared Kushner, Bibi Netanyahu, Donald Trump. Pact. And you can't sit down and decide Israeli-Palestinian issues without the Palestinians.
Yeah, one would think. unless you want to continue things as they are. And I think, moving the embassy was a huge, stick in the eye that, again, I don't think the Palestinians will accept anything. And I try not to get in the middle of that because I don't know every nuance and I haven't studied it extensively. But you got to think that there's at least some way for those two areas to coexist.
Well, here's the bottom line. We have to support the stability of Israel.
Sure.
No question about it. And we're friends with them, no question about it. However, our leverage point has always been that we have not said yes to moving the embassy. We have not said yes to the Golan Heights. We haven't said yes to everything, so it gave us leverage and gave us some credibility with the Palestinian side to say, hey, we can broker this for you. We're no longer the brokers. I don't care what Jared Kushner does or says or thinks. We're no longer the brokers. Somebody else is going to have to broker it.
Yeah. And again, another one of those moments where U.S. influence is being diminished. And again, if you're one of those people who's we're not an exceptional nation, and you don't buy into the U.S. exceptionalism, or we should be a superpower, I guess this is something you could be happy about, because it's taking us out. Right. It's taking us away from those tables.
Right. Correct.
At least my thought on him. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to get your thought on this on a whole different subject, because the First Republican has come out and I guess almost called for the impeachment of Trump. This Justin Amash from Michigan. I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Yes, Justin Amash. He's always been kind of a guy that's,
kind of a kook.
Yeah, pushing against the system, too. I know when I had my book signed in D.C., he sent some messages over about how interested he was. He was mad at Boehner at the time, and he's always kind of, bucked authority. But in this case, he came out and says he's supporting impeachment. Now, they went immediately to Mitt Romney, because Justin Amash is from Michigan. Mitt Romney's father was governor of Michigan, but that's not why they went to Mitt Romney. Right. They went to Mitt Romney, the media, thinking maybe Mitt would say, maybe I'll consider that. And then that would have blew the lid off in the Senate. But Mitt Romney, kind of praised Amash for, having this conscience and things like that. And Mitt Romney basically said people he perceived it different, and the people weren't really ready for it, which leaves the door open a little bit.
Right.
But there'll be no domino effect. Nobody else will really, if at best one other person, but nobody else will follow along. But obviously the White House is angry about it. Now, one little chuckle on this one, Rick. The Speaker's always said anything that would happen would be also bipartisan. So I guess a few of the Democratic side communicated, hey, here's our Republican. It's bipartisan now. I don't think the Speaker's going to grab at that.
Yeah, here's our token.
Right.
But here's the thing. When the economy takes a nosedive, and a lot of economists saying it may happen, do you see some other – because I have some friends in Congress who are saying, look, in the cloakroom, nobody's happy. None of the people on the Republican aisle are thrilled. They're scared to death of it.
Well, I've never seen anybody that can get into combat more than he can. He defies political rules sometimes. He won't let things go. He'll argue with everybody to the end. And I think some of the members, Republican side, are obviously afraid.
I mean, because like him or hate him, the reality is he does have a sizable base that for any reason. I'm looking at the fact that you look in the areas that he had strong support, which is the farming community, who are being really hurt by these tariffs. There's this stuff doesn't go without pain, and they're the ones who are being kind of beat up on this. The fact that he's calling them patriots and all of this stuff seems to be, for at least the majority, seems to be making them happy. I know there's a couple squeaking, but some of the stories I've also seen, we're with him to the end because he's stirring what up.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. No, I understand. We're the big re-election campaign. When's that firing off?
Well, now, this one, I can understand what he's doing, knowing his nature, and that will be around the 16th. It'll be, not on Father's Day, but around there they're going to do it. And what he's doing is he's firing this up early, because the rules of politics, in a sense. If you're sitting there and you're a president and you're incumbent and you're not going to have any opposition except Weld, which is no opposition, and you've got a great big Democrat primary with 20-some people in it, what do? You just go about your business. You propose laws and you shut up, right?
That's generally how things work.
Right? But not for President Trump. He's going to wade into this. And you know what he's going to do it for? He will start jabbing at every single candidate that's running on the Democratic ticket. He's going to jab at him. He's going to create the general election in June. And that's what's going to happen. And the reason he's doing that, he gets them off, as we used to say, off our square. He gets them off their square.
Yep.
And he gets them arguing with him instead of proposing things that they want to do and getting attention. He'll be right there with them in the media.
No, and the thing that worries me is our media, the lapdog stenographers that they can be, will give him all the attention, and we'll hear nothing. Look, I think it's brilliant. I think he should have launched already, and he should be doing his campaign rallies already, just because he will take all of the oxygen away from all of the other candidates.
The biggest fake news, Rick, in my opinion, when somebody says fake news, is CNN getting outraged at the president. That's the biggest fake news. They like this. They feed on it.
No, look, I had a friend of mine, who I'm very close to. He goes, how are things going? I go, well, the reality is, since Janus, we've taken a major financial hit because, we've lost a good portion of our revenue. But the truth of the matter is, the guy never fails to deliver content. I mean, there's always something to talk about. So it's one or the other. And look, I understand the Les Moonves comment that, the guy's making us money. I mean, he's a disaster. He's a train wreck. He's horrible for the country. But at least you never run out of something to talk about.
Correct. That's right.
I mean, that's scary, but that's the sad, unfortunate reality of all of this.
Right.
It's crazy. I want to get some of your thoughts on the tariff talk because, man, I'm so tired of people with their hair on fire. Oh, prices are going to go through the roof. Walmart's raising prices. Oh, it's the end. Farmers are dying in the streets. It's getting a little ridiculous now.
I love the tariffs. Are they painful in several ways? Yes. Is there a pain for especially farmers and soybean farmers? Yes. For the long haul, It's got to be better. I mean, at some point in time, we have to make a stand. And, if it means the refrigerators go up $10, well, then, maybe look for one on sale or try to hold off from certain spending habits. But, I'm not in sympathy of Walmart saying, oh, woe is us, we're going to have to raise the prices. We're making a stand. And the only thing that the Chinese understand is pressure and aggression. And they have walked all over us for decades. And I like this stance, and the world is not going to come to an end, and I think we will eventually win on some things, just like the renegotiation of NAFTA. But I think with the Chinese, it can be bigger, and then they'll learn a lesson,
right.
And then the next president, if it's not Trump, will then be able to say, "Hey, we'll do it to you again."
I hope.
I mean, think it's a great. I do. I hope. I don't care which party. I hope they say, remember what we did to you? We're starting it again tomorrow morning.
Yeah. No,
I hope so.
I hope I'm right there with you. But the thing that's bothering me is all of these people go, well, all my prices are going to go up. It's going to cost us more. I go, then just don't buy anything. I mean, how difficult is that?
We've lost jobs. That's where our prices went out the window. And they came in, they had cheap cars, cheap toys, cheap products. And as soon as they put our companies out of business, then they raise the prices. Nothing's cheap.
Exactly. I mean,
nothing.
As I've said, people have got to remember, you're a worker before you're a consumer. You got to make the money before you can spend it. If there are no jobs, there's no spending. So some point you have to make this stand. And, I had someone, say, well, what about, what the president's going after? I go, my fear is that he's going to completely screw it up. And this is again, my concern about Trump, because he seems solely focused on property, on trade enforcement, on the intellectual property and all of that. And to be honest, I don't really care about intellectual property rights for corporate America.
Right.
It doesn't affect me. If you're dumb enough to go over there and share your technology, well, the heck with you.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned about currency manipulation. I'm more concerned about labor rights and environmental rights. That's, to me, where the real theft is.
Yeah, this is the one thing he's done that I think that, I hope he concludes and takes it to the end.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't completely screw it up. That's really my fear, that completely screws it up, and that we never do it again. And finally, Kamala Harris. Gotta get to her plan. Evidently, she executive order to fine companies that don't guarantee equal pay. You're a legislator. Is there a way to actually write this that it works?
Here's the problem. Obviously, I'm for equal pay for women, and there should be no dispute about this in 2019. Just it's the standard question of how do you get there? How do you write a generic law, and how do you evaluate the pay and the person? I'm just not sure I have an answer to that. And I don't know if she does. I think it's great she brought up the issue. I'm just not sure how the legislation will get there.
Yeah, see, I have a very simple path forward. Obviously, transparency has to be front and foremost. This idea of firing someone when they tell their coworker what they make is ridiculous.
Right.
And it happens. Right. I know it's happened. The other thing is I'm a big fan of labor contracts. Everybody has a contract. It's a transparent. And to me, that's the way forward. This idea that we're going to have some agency that's going to, you know, try and stealth this stuff out. I just don't see it. I think in every workplace, every worker should have a contract. It should all be above boards. And that's how you kill all this stuff.
Right.
It's sunshine.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great issue. I've been asked about this all day. I just don't know how you make it work.
Yeah. Yeah, again, I'm happy she brought it up, but we'll see what happens.
Sure.
Bob, I appreciate the time. Always
fun. Thank you, Rick. Okay, thanks, Rick.